This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte, and my co-host Souther Teague is away for work, which is fine. Unfortunately, he can't be here today, but that's fine because I have a room full of really great friends here today, and very excited to have them. I remember meeting our guest today a couple years back at Tales of the Cocktail, and then got to go to the distillery, which he is the head distiller at, over this last summer, and really got to hit it off and become good friends and bonded over rock and roll, motorcycles, hot rods, and whiskey. And I'm glad to introduce our guest today. We've been talking about this for a while. It's just it's been on the old docket, but it's great to have you in town and in the studio today. Please welcome Rob Dietrich from Stranahan's Whiskey out of Colorado.
Happy to be here, brother.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Cheers, cheers.
So, I mean, this is kind of funny because, like, before we got into the studio, we were talking about some different things here at the bar at Roberta's. We're talking about certain things like the phenomenon of specialty like can releases for different like craft brewing and how it's become like such a thing. And we'll probably get to this in a second, but there's definitely a hype built around Stranahan's Colorado whiskey with one of the marks, one of the SKUs that you guys have, which is the Snowflake.
Right.
We'll talk about it in a second.
Yeah.
But you guys really like started building the category of like American single malts. And I mean, it's been around, what, 9 years, 10 years?
We've been around for, well, since 2004. So 14.
So longer. Yeah. Wow, shit.
Yeah,
14. That's crazy.
Yeah, March 9th, 2004 is when we got our distilling permit. And that was the first time anybody had had a distilling permit in Colorado. So wow. First whiskey, first distilling in Colorado.
It's amazing.
And in 2004, I know, it's nuts. You would think that would have happened way before that, but yeah.
Yeah, I think there was actually like not a whole lot of American distilling going on like back then. I mean, you had like as far as like small batch American distilling, that is.
Right.
Obviously, there's a lot of American whiskey distilling going on for, you know, a couple of centuries. But the craft, like small batch whiskey distilling hadn't really started. I mean, there was like Tuttletown was doing some stuff.
Yeah.
And
like McCarthy's, St. George.
McCarthy's, yeah.
St. George. Really, there weren't that many people doing craft distilling. We were 22nd. The 22nd distilling permit to be issued since Prohibition. So, I mean, that shows you just in 2004, there's only 22 permits that had been applied for since the 30s.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Super cool. I mean, so, like, let's just go ahead and get into the, first of all, like, I'm really excited to have you on the show because, like I said before, like, you and I, we clicked on a lot of different aspects of our lives, and, like, we were sitting around talking about whiskey, and I was like, man, I love Denver, Colorado. My first motorcycle, I've only been in two, by the way, motorcycle wreck. Neither were my fault, but I was like, yeah, man, my first motorcycle wreck was in Denver. And you're like, oh, shit, I'm sorry about that. I'm like, no, man, I love that place because it really opened my eyes. But that's where we started bonding on this stuff. And then turns out we became very good friends, and cheers to that.
And whiskey helps.
whiskey does help.
Whiskey helps. You know, and the way I always I'd like to talk about is, you know, if we're talking whiskey, have a little whiskey in us. So we are currently enjoying and imbibing.
And this is the first mark. This is the straight up the
OG, the OG, the original.
Stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So Stranahan's original all malt barley whiskey that that we make from grain to bottle in Denver.
Yeah.
You know, we have. I mean, you saw the distillery, and it's so much fun just to be able to walk through and see. You know, you see the grain silo outside, and you see the mashing fermenting in the mill, milling it, and you see all the fermenters.
The old truck.
The old truck, yeah, 1937 Dodge. It used to be John Wayne's truck.
It's that thing, amazing.
I had a blast. I had that thing at my house for about a year working on it. You know, I went through the engine. It's a flathead six with the oil. It has an oil bath filter that when it opened it up, it was a toilet paper roll. It was literally a roll of toilet paper in there used as a filter without the, they pulled the cardboard tube out of it. And I looked at it and I was like, you know, hell, that works.
I
replaced the filter. I put another roll of toilet paper in there.
Yeah.
And it works just fine.
Well, that's actually something that you're, I mean, not to sidetrack too much, but like you're definitely a very mechanically experimental person.
Motorhead.
Because you had a motorcycle that ran on biofuel that you converted, right?
Correct? Yeah. Yeah. It was a Czechoslovakian motorcycle. Frame that my buddy and I had found down in Taos, down out in the desert. We pulled the engine out of it.
Taos, New Mexico?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. And we pulled the engine out of it, and we pulled the engine out of a cement mixer. It was a diesel engine, and we put that in the bike. We had to cut the frame a little bit and put it in there. And so we put a separate tank on the side that had diesel fuel in it, and then we used the regular tank for vegetable oil. So we take the vegetable oil and just literally filter all the chunks of French fries out of it. And I mean, it wasn't too scientific. We didn't get too crazy with that. And then we you'd start up the bike on diesel and then switch over to vegetable oil. You can get like 300-400 miles out of a tank of vegetable oil.
It's amazing.
And that thing was fun. I got it banned in Ouray County, Colorado, because I crashed it because it only had front brakes. I didn't have rear brake on that thing, I endoed it. And somebody saw it because I was sitting there trying to fix the bike so I can drive off. And somebody saw the accident, called it in. This cop came up, and you know, I'm out in the middle of the country, out in the middle of nowhere. And here comes this cop. And I was like, ah, shit, I know what's going on here.
Yeah. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Well, and he's looking at it and he's like, okay, what is this? Like, I mean, he's looking at it. It's a rat bike. I literally put a bullet in the back fender with a 357. So, I mean, it looks, you know, it's a full blown rat bike. But, and he said, all right, where's the paperwork on this? Like, well, I don't have it with me. It didn't exist. And he said, all right, okay, I've seen this bike around. And I know that I know it's totally illegal. I said, I don't ever want to see it in my county again. I'm like, fair enough.
Well,
yeah.
did you go back though?
Yeah, I mean, I'd still buzz around. I lived in that county, unfortunately. So
yeah. Well, getting back to the whiskey. Also, I mean, like, you have that event in the summer where. You do want to talk about the event where you bring you guys open up the distillery to for a tour. It's called the Cask Thief.
Cask Thief, yeah.
Which is really cool because, like, for those out there listening, it's a cool event. You get to go to the distillery, which is a very nice distillery, by the way. I mean, I've seen some like
there's some really piece together glossy places,
ones.
Yeah.
I've seen some piece together ones, yeah. But that one's really cool. And during this event, you have all these different. Experimental cask vibes where like people they get a passport and they get to stamp like every one that they try.
Right.
And you have bands, you have food, and it's freaking awesome.
It's a blast.
This dogs is, running around everywhere. It's great.
Yeah, that's Colorado, man. It's
there's a dispensary across the street.
Yep, yep. If you're getting too bored, you run across the street. Want to change your vibe a little bit.
Now
it's a fun. So basically what I'll do is I'll hand select six different barrels that have of different kind of cask finishes or unique flavors, and we invite, you know, the public to come in. You know, now we're charging a ticket. If you come in, you get your glass, you get your passport, and then we'll pull with the Whiskey Thief. We'll pull it right out of the barrel for you, put it in your glass.
You should call it Glassport.
Yeah.
Nice, Dave. But yeah, it's a great. I was lucky enough to get to attend it this last summer, and it was. Such a blast, man. And again, it's like you get to see the magic of what's happening in the distillery and in the rick houses and like everything. It's really cool. And you have a really nice tasting room. We get to learn all about the different marks that you have. And what I think that they're like, in my opinion, there's like a really cool, especially being a newer distillery, like as far as like the actual timeline goes for distilleries, you have a really cool. Like newer way of thinking about like modern distillation, just like in the same way that like you've got like with the motorcycle story. It's like you've got really cool things. Like I remember my first time to have Stranahan's was about 10 years ago, like the yellow label one. And there was, you know, on the label, which is also kind of avant-garde, and it's got a like ribbon wrapped around the the bottle. There's these a section for notes where you can say like it was distilled this day, this is batch number, blah blah blah. But then it's also like we were listening to so and so. We were listening to Tom Waits at the time when we were like distilling this.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Like that's not something you would get from like an old school like malt whiskey producer. You know, it's very like by the books. Like here's this thing
taking themselves too seriously.
Taking themselves too seriously. Yeah. You can take yourself seriously, but you don't like you can take the job seriously, but you don't have to take yourself too seriously.
Right. Exactly. You know? You need to have some fun.
It should be fun.
And it was, you know, we'd all hand sign the label and put our own comments on there. You can kind of pick up on the personality of the guys who are making the whiskey. So you get listen to Willie Nelson or listen to Johnny Cash or wrenching on the Dodge.
The Church of the
Church of the Baby Willie Jesus, brother. Church of the Baby Willie Jesus. Can I get a Hail Willie?
Hail Willie. Yeah, man. Actually, based on that also, it's like there's something very outlaw about the brand that you guys have and like the way that you make whiskeys. And a couple weeks ago, we had the crew in from the Cane Club Collective. We're talking about rum and like how outlaw it is because there's no rules with rum because it's an international product and you can kind of do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As long as it's made with, you know, sugar.
Cane sugar, right.
You know? And I feel that way about the modern American whiskey vibes, you know, like the smaller independent, like kind of like blooming, like I won't want to say economy, but just like the vibe of like what's happening out there with modern distillers. Like you can kind of just like, especially with the category of like an American single malt, which is actually not necessarily a category yet. It's not an official category, right?
Right. We're working on that.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of going back to, you know, we are a little outlaw in Colorado and we love that. I mean, that's kind of how it all started with Jess Graber, our founder, the guy who started it, you know. When he went to the state of Colorado and said, "Hey, I want to make a whiskey," you're like, "Well, nobody's ever done that before. We don't know how the hell to do that." You know, it's so he had to go through the TTB and figure out how to create the regulations and work with the state of Colorado to actually design the structure for distilling. And once he did that, that door was just wide open. I mean, first whiskey. Now there's over 80 distilleries in Colorado now.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, it's just and there's more every day. It just seems like they're popping up all over the place.
It's so crazy, man. I mean, like that's massive growth. I mean, just huge. In one state alone.
Yeah,
that's insane.
When you kind of wonder about how sustainable that is overall, like if you're just starting out, like I'm going to start a whiskey right now, and it's so saturated. But if you do it a different way, if you make a whiskey, we fired on all cylinders. You want to make juice that people are going to come back and drink again. And that's the whole point, you know, make good whiskey first and then, you know, throw some branding, you know, figure out your branding. And we put that silver cap on the top because we're all outdoors,
which, you know, it's doubles fun. As a jigger or a shot glass.
3 ounce pour. It's a distiller's pour for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Distiller's jigger.
And that's one of the things that, that is also very iconic with the bottle, not just the label, but like the cap, like the 3 ounce shot glass on top. It's like, you know, kind of like, all right, here we go.
Yeah,
it's all ready to go.
You throw it in the panniers on the motorcycle. You know, throw it in the saddlebag
and drink it. Yeah,
exactly, and then at the end of the day, when you're sitting around the campfire after riding all day, that's when you crack open the bottle.
There you go.
Pop it open, and you pour a little into the cap, and then pass it around with your friends and enjoy a little whiskey after riding.
And you know, after inevitably, when you lose that thing, then you just take it straight from the bottle.
Right, exactly, because it will get lost.
It will get lost.
Yeah.
Actually, when you guys, for the audience out there, like when they rolled in today, there was one of the bottles didn't. It actually very like kind of serendipitously the sherry cask finish, which I actually have a bottle of batch number one from the trip from the summer.
Right.
We just crushed it like a couple nights ago. I was saving it. I was like, I was tasting everyone on it, you know, that I knew would enjoy something like that. And I kept the maroon jigger cap shot glass thing, and they rolled in. And that one was missing, and I just happened to have it in my bag, so yep. We completed the whole thing.
That was
so
perfect. We were taking a photo of all of our bottles lined up, and that was the only bottle that was missing the cap. You had the cap in the bag. That was awesome.
For once, I did something right. But yeah, go back to the whole outlaw thing. It's pretty cool. It's like you're talking about Jess.
Yeah.
And you're talking about his, like, he had his land, you're starting to make this this whiskey, and his neighbor...
George Stranahan, yeah.
George, yeah. Yeah,
well, so Jess Graber was he was a volunteer firefighter up in Aspen. I mean, Jess, just to kind of give you a little background, he's just, like, kind of one of those original outlaw mountain men.
He really is, man.
I mean, the guy is cool as hell, and I get to spend a lot of time with him. I'm very fortunate to spend a lot of time with him on the road. I was just in Texas with him, and he's still a wild child. I mean, he's crazy, but he was called to a fire at George Stranahan's barn, and as he likes to joke, well, we saved the foundation, you know, but the barn burned down, of course.
Real barn burner.
Yeah, yeah. And he started, George Stranahan owns Flying Dog Brewery, and right. So at the time it was in Denver, and Jess started, you know, talking to me, said, hey, you know, I make a little moonshine. I need a place to, right now I'm just making it in my horse shed, which is an open air, you know, horse shed. And I can't do it in the winter. Can I start distilling in your barn? And George says, yeah, as long as I get my cut, you know, sure. You know, I'll just give me a couple of jars here and there. And so Jess was making, he was making moonshine up there since the early 70s and giving it away as gifts, you know, at Christmas, instead of making everybody cookies, sure. He's making moonshine. And,
yeah.
And it's, you know, pretty popular.
What a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, and, you know, Hunter S. Thompson lived right next door to George Stranahan. And, you know, he'd come over and sit with George on occasion when he was distilling. And, you know, I asked him about that because I'm a huge
Hunter. It's funny because Ralph Steadman, the artist who did a lot of Hunter S. Thompson's artwork for his books and for, like movie, like, for like, most iconically would be Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yep.
Like that poster, that's Ralph Steadman's artwork.
Yep.
And then you tie that in with Hunter S. Thompson, and then
Flying Dog.
They used to have, like, well,
they still do. Yeah.
So yeah, Ralph Steadman did all their labeling.
Yeah, their artwork. Yeah, exactly.
So cool.
I mean, it's awesome. I think we were originally going to talk to him about doing the label for the whiskey, but we just decided it was too much. You know, like I would have loved it.
That would have been cool.
I thought it would be great, but
there's still a story there, and we're talking about it right now.
Yeah,
so that's
cool. Yeah, exactly. And
I actually, rather than having it like right in your face, I like the fact that we can sit around and drink whiskey and talk about all the connections.
Right, exactly. How everything just ties in.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I asked Jess about him one time. I said, you know, what was it like hanging out with Hunter S. Thompson? He goes, I can never understand a word that son of a bitch said. I say, you know, he said, I can never understand a word out of his mouth. He's just mumbling all the time. But, I mean, they had a blast. You know, he'd be distilling up there. And Jess talked George into forming a partnership. He said, hey, what if we moved down to Denver and I built a still house next door to your brewery. You brew our wash for us.
Yeah.
And we'll distill it. We'll make some whiskey and make some money. And George says, you know, I don't think that's a very good idea. And Jess says, well, what if we call that whiskey Stranahan's? And George says, yeah, that's a pretty damn good idea.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
I think it's smart. So,
yeah.
So that's how they started their partnership. And that was, 2002 is when they actually formed the company. And then 2004 is when we actually got our permit.
It's pretty cool. Like as far as the modern whiskey distillery goes, there's only, I mean, I know that it's like it happens more now, but there was at that time that Stranahan's was kind of like getting up and going. There's only one other distillery that I can actually think of that was Kraskovich family, Charbet, you know, the winery.
Oh,
and
right.
Then they started, like, Marco started distilling spirits, and he's the only other person that I know of that started making whiskey out of someone else's brewery. And he would take the Racer 5 IPA and distill that and make a whiskey.
Right.
And he would like throw a bunch of hops in it. So he was doing his
hopped whiskey. Right.
Yeah. It was really cool. And it smells like weed.
Yeah.
So it's like
weed family. Yeah.
You Colorado and California people, you know, just like find out any opportunity you can, you know.
We like our weed, man.
You like your weed and your whiskey, man.
Yep.
So it's pretty cool.
Our weed, our whiskey, our women.
Dude, so the I guess we should talk about this for a second. Like, let's kind of like backtrack. It's like, what makes a Colorado whiskey? What are the guidelines to make a Colorado whiskey? Because it's not like on the actual whiskey label, it doesn't say necessarily, like, it's in bold print, it doesn't say American single malt. It says Colorado whiskey. So
it does. And that's changing actually on the sherry cask. You can see it says
Rocky Mountain.
Yeah. Rocky Mountain single malt. So now we're starting to identify as, you know, not only American single malt, but by region, you know, Rocky Mountain single malt, because it's just like any place. I think
different water source.
Yeah, it's like a terroir. You know, you've got, you know, if you're messing around with your own grain, you know, all of our 90% of our barley is grown in Colorado. All of our water is Rocky Mountain spring water. We use El Dorado Springs water. We have that shipped in from 30 miles away.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, I remember you telling me about that.
So, I mean, for us, it's, you know, that's where it's exciting. I mean, it's about using the best ingredients we have. I mean, you talk to any distiller, it's about their water source. You know, sure. In Kentucky, it's the water that's running across the limestone.
Limestone, yeah.
You know, imparting flavor into the bourbon. For us, we're lucky enough to be able to get that that, you know, Rocky Mountain snow melt. I mean, it's about the, you know, we're at, we're at 5280. We're a mile high in Denver. So,
yeah.
All that water's just clean and coming from the mountains. So it is about the ingredients. It's about how you source those ingredients too. I mean, it's malted locally. It's, you know, it's grown locally. I know some of the farmers. I grew up in Southern Colorado. Some of those farmers, my best friend when I was a kid, his dad was a crop duster, and we would be the marker car, you know, for the plane to come down, and, you know, we're breathing whatever shit he was spraying probably. But that's where I got to know a lot of those families. And, like, you know, now it's like kind of full circle for me, because, like, oh, we're buying their barley, malting it, and making whiskey out of it. So it's pretty fun.
Very cool. Was there ever a point in your life where, like, before you got into this, that you thought you would be a master distiller of a whiskey?
Not at all. Not even any way, shape, or form. I mean, I was my background was in the music business, you know, right. rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, managing bands, managing stages.
But making whiskey in Colorado is pretty fucking rock and roll, man.
I would agree. I think it was a natural segue. It actually worked out well to my advantage.
You know, sometimes life just, like, creates a path for you. And like, the thing that you really find is your passion. It kind of just finds you.
It finds you,
you in, you know?
I would totally agree with that. It's It just naturally happened. I wasn't seeking a job. Hell, it never even occurred to me that you can make your own whiskey. Just never even thought about it.
Right.
Until I went to that distiller and I was like, oh my God. And because you ever see the stills, I mean, to me, that's the most beautiful piece of equipment in the world. You come in, you see, we've got five stills. We've got three 800 gallon copper, pot column stills. And they're gorgeous. I mean, they're just beautiful. I love working with those things every day.
Yeah, man. Like, dude, we talked about having Carl or like Vendome or somebody make us a gas tank for our chopper.
Right, right, right. Exactly.
Which we still need to do.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
It's a worthy project.
I think we need to follow through on that.
I think we can make that happen.
Yeah, yeah. I'm down.
Cool, man. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with my buddy Rob Dietrich of Stranahan's, and let's pour some more whiskey, man.
Yeah,
let's
talk
about some of the other marks, man.
Cool, let's do it.
Cool. All right, back in a moment.
You're the shape of my heart. ever known the wonder. Straight and narrow, there's a very thin line.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
I love it.
And we're back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, we have we have a lot of whiskey. Thanks to my good buddy, Rob Dietrich of Stranahan's out of Denver, Colorado. So we've touched a little bit on the beginning of Stranahan's. And we talked a little bit about the Cash Thieves, which is a great, great hangout time, you know, like a big party. Get to try out, you know, a lot of the weird experimental stuff.
Right.
Actually, one of my favorites was there was that giant sherry cask that we got to try out. And then turns out that... you got a sherry cask finish.
Right. Yeah. Well, we were already working on that for a little bit, and I was, you know, wanted to try it out on the general public just to see what their feedback was. Everybody loved that thing, and we'd already been working on it. You know, whiskey is always, it's always about the long game. You know, if you're going to do something, you got to
Plan ahead.
Yeah, you got to plan ahead, exactly.
So it was funny to me because like everyone that you know, when we went on that trip, there was like a lot of my buddies. From New York, that were on the same trip, and we got to go to this thing together. And it's like peers, friends, industry people that I really respect, and like we have like we kind of like try stuff out together a lot. And we're like, "What do you think about this?" You know, like, this is really cool. And like to go to an event like that, we all kind of like. Kind of huddled around the sherry cask, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Yeah, we're bottling this."
Yeah,
and it was already bottled.
Yes,
like
yeah.
you just nailed it. You know, it was really cool. I mean, like going into that it must be nerve wracking, trying to like predict, you know, any kind of like trends as far as like palates go. You know, like
yeah. What are people going to like? I mean, you know, I know I like it, but does that mean everybody else is going to like it? You know, and that's what you always hope. And you know, that was one of the things that was kind of nice to be able to get that feedback, at Cask Thief when you're just, you know, talking to people like, "Hey, what do you think? Which one did you like the best?" And people are like, "Oh man, I love that sherry cask." And we'd already had it in the works and you're kind of like wiping a little bit of sweat off your forehead and going, "Okay, good." Cause you're not sure if it's actually going to work out, even though you can taste it. You know, it's going to taste awesome, but getting that feedback.
Yeah,
that's key.
It was so cool, man. Like, and like having it drawn like straight from the barrel, that was so cool. And like that, and by the way, for the listeners, like it's not just like a bunch. It's not like six different whiskeys that were like drawn from the barrel. You're actually like in bottled and poured out. You're pulling from the barrel, which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something I really like fell in love with. Like on a trip to Cognac years ago. We were tasting stuff straight from the barrel and it was so cool, man.
It's about as magical as you can get if you're a whiskey lover see this big copper, you know, tube that you're sticking down into the barrel and then pulling out and then all of a sudden your glass is just full of this gorgeous amber, you know, love.
And if you're lucky, there's a little bit of sediment.
Right. Yeah. You get a little char in there. Yeah. You see a little char floating around in there. And
cause that's when you know it's real and raw and like,
yeah,
fucking outlaw, man, actually.
And cask strength. Cheers,
and
brother.
Cask strength, totally.
Yeah, you're going to know you're drinking whiskey when you're drinking cask strength right out of the barrel.
Totally. You know, there was I want to talk about this for a second before we move on to... I mean, like, this sherry finish is amazing.
Actually, we're drinking the Diamond Peak.
Well, I know, but, like, I wanted the... I just want to talk about... like, there was one that I really, really fucking loved, and it wasn't because, like... It was interesting. There was one that was, it was just like the Stranahan's, but you, instead of aging, laterally, you aged it vertically in a barrel.
Oh, right. Yeah. We called that one the headstand.
Yeah.
Because that was, bung in the end of the barrel instead of on the belly, on the side of the barrel. And really that was more for efficiency and being able to store more barrels in the same square footprint that I could. And it doesn't really change the profile that much. I mean, you're still getting surface area to the volume to surface area. But it's, for us, it was more efficient, and I wanted to make sure, you know, I got a barrel from Independent Save Company, and we wanted to make sure it wasn't going to change the flavor profile by storing it that way. And it was honestly just as good, or if not better.
Yeah. And you know what? I've never heard of anyone like experimenting on like doing that. Cause like, yeah, I mean, people will like do like occasionally, like, I know like there's experiments with, changing the barrel heads and like, like reintroducing staves, like Maker's Mark 46, like stuff like that with like a different, treatment on the staves and they drop them in there. But but no one's ever like turned the barrel over.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
and it's such a simple idea.
And then, it's just an all, you know, for us, it was about efficiency, and that we just started looking and we're like, you know, we can store so much more in here.
But coming from a cocktail point of view, like, or just even thinking of like, think about it this way. Like, so there's the difference between a flute or a coupe.
Right.
When you're having champagne.
Yeah.
Like the surface area, like that lets the champagne bubble off. Like the reason why coupes started becoming like popular back in the day is because we're getting like really shitty champagne during Prohibition. So they're like, all right, let's let this bubble off. It's like a little too
you know,
little funky. With a fine champagne, you want the surface area to be smaller so it contains the bubbles, right?
Right.
So it's kind of cool to like experiment. I mean, it's not kind of cool, but it is very cool to like open up the surface area and let the whiskey breathe.
Right.
That's what I took away from that. That was cool.
And it is, and I mean, it is about your glass. Like right now we're drinking out of rocks glasses. And you can, I mean, you can nose
with it. We're not drinking out of country Western glasses.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, it's not gospel either. Could be.
Well, it's kind of gospel. Hey,
we are preaching.
Yeah.
We are. I mean, I consider like churches anywhere I'm sitting down drinking. I'm worshiping. You know, that's sitting there drinking whiskey in a bar. That's
baby Willie Jesus.
Church of the baby Willie Jesus. Exactly.
So that's I don't want to get too far from the because we have a little bit of time left. But
sure.
But I got so like caught up in that. It's such a great event. Like anyone that wants to go out there to Denver in the summer and like check out beautiful Denver and go check out the distillery, you got to go by for the Cask Thief situation, because like it really is like you're just right there with the casks and like all the experimental stuff that you're doing. And like the main one, like I was saying before, is like I really love that sherry cask finish, just the big cask. But like right now, what are we drinking?
So we're drinking Diamond Peak right now. So Diamond Peak it's the same malt barley whiskey, same white American oak barrels with the number 3 char, but it's all 4-year. So with our original, that's 2, 3, 4, and 5-year-old barrels, and then with the Diamond Peak, all strictly 4. You know, so it's you get all that flavor from the oak. You get that depth of oak. You get the depth of kind of like almost dark chocolate a little bit too.
Yeah.
This one's my favorite. I love it.
You know what? You're totally right. I mean, like all these whiskeys, they have a certain amount of richness to them that it actually kind of takes me back to Colorado. You know, I feel like I'm in Colorado every
little
time
taste
I drink
of home.
This whiskey. Yeah. And I want that kind of like with the clean, crisp air and seeing the snow on the mountains. Maybe I've been skiing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I've been snowboarding. Maybe I've just been hanging out at the bar all day. But which the latter is probably the most likely.
Right.
But but it's they have this great like rich maltiness to it and like to them. And this one, yeah, you're absolutely right, man.
I love that depth. I mean, that's, you know, that's
and this
the
one's
thing.
Like the most kind of it's the most like rare one to find.
Diamond Peak, you'll be able to find it. The sherry is probably a little more rare to find.
Is it really?
Yeah, because we just launched that back in October.
Okay, because I've seen the yellow label and the sherry like around, but I haven't seen the Diamond Peak.
That's because everybody's buying it.
Is that right?
I think so.
Oh, well, actually, let's talk about that for a second. I said at the beginning of the show that you do the snowflake.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, that's I was talking about the recent like popularity of the can releases from different and I guess it's been going on for like 5 or 6 years, but it's really kind of over the past 2 years, feels like, of like smaller breweries doing these crazy can releases. And it's usually like a 16-ounce like tall boy can.
Right, right.
And people will be lined up around the corner.
Yeah.
Camping out to get these cans. You guys have a similarity with that, with the Snowflake.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of crazy how it just organically grew that way. I mean, we were just messing around. We were experimenting a little bit, just taking our malt barley whiskey that was already aged in white American oak barrels for around 3 years or so, taking it out, transferred into a variety of used barrels, like Sherry Oloroso, of course, cognac, rum, Tempranillo, Malbec, Cab Franc, you know, anything I can get my hands on. And then they're cask finishing at different ages. So it'll be, you know, it might be 6 months in one barrel, might be a year in another barrel, might be 2 years in another barrel. And I'll build that by nose and taste. You know, just I'll pull those together. It might be, you know, two parts Tempranillo, one part rum, one part cognac, one part port. And that's a batch. And, you know, as in nature, no two snowflakes are alike. So I always make a batch different every year. And we have such a following for it now. People come out from all over the country and they start lining up days in advance before
we camp out, right?
They camp out. This last year, we do it's always the first Saturday in December. This last year, the first guys got in line. They drove up from Wisconsin, got in line at 5:30 in the morning on Wednesday for a Saturday morning release. They camped out the whole time.
That's amazing.
In December in Colorado. And it's
that's some real Colorado hippie shit, right?
Yeah,
there,
no
man.
Kidding. It's crazy. It's fun. And it's always, you always see the camaraderie out there. And that's what I love about it. It's like people are, you know, they're out there for the same thing. They're all different walks of life. Everybody's camped out. You know, by the time, you know, I stayed there this last year overnight and just go out there and I talk to people. You know, I'll go out there at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, 3 or 4, just go out there, shake hands. Thank people for coming out. Get them excited about the reason they've been hanging out.
It's a good thing there's a dispensary right across the street.
I know. You know, it's funny. I always tell those guys, the dispensary guys, I say, hey, you know, we're about to have, you know, about 1,000 people around the distillery. So you might want to staff up because you guys are going to be busy.
Yeah. It's amazing. I kind of just want to go camp out. I mean, I love the whiskey, but I kind of just want to go camp out and hang out.
It's fun. Sounds to see. Cool. Like, I'll go out there, you know, I'll go out there and drink whiskey with those guys out there on the sidewalk. Everybody's got their tents and their sleeping bags. And, you know, we brought this, you know, we've been ranked, you know, kind of cranking it up every year. And this year we had a band that started at 10 o'clock and went till, you know, almost 6 in the morning.
Wow.
It was a bluegrass band. It was a lot of fun. So nice. We kind of created this little, Snowflake City out in the parking lot.
Snowflake City.
Yeah. It was
oh my God. That's like tattoo worthy.
Right. Yeah. Hells yeah.
All right, buddy, tattoos after this?
Yeah, man.
Cool. I'm not even joking.
I'm down.
Thanks, Dave. I thought you were asleep. Cool, man. And I think that's just like, outside of like the kind of like hype that's involved with like the breweries doing like can releases all the time. It's like this is like. It's really cool that like you've built up this kind of vibe that people feel like they can be a part of it. You know, yeah. they are a part of it.
Yeah, there's some whiskey community.
Yeah, it's a total community. Yeah. And it's incredible, man.
Well, you know, it kind of started. I mean, we were, you know, when we were first starting out, we didn't have a whole lot of money for the company. So we had volunteer bottlings.
You started an independent.
Right.
With
that nobody had ever done before. Like, right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we first started bottling, I mean, we'd bring in our friends, we'd bring in their friends, their significant others.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And we just have a bottling party and we crank up the music and, you know, I was filling, we had a 6-head filler called, we named her Charlene, the big bad bottling machine. Yeah. Just filling the bottles. I'd slide them down that, you know, our volunteers would put the cork in, put the label on. You know, put the cap on and box it up. And during those days, we were next door to Flying Dogs, so they were providing our beer. And afterwards, we'd bring out this stainless steel bucket, empty all the whiskey lines into the bucket, bring out a ladle and a bucket of ice, and ladle whiskey into your glass. So you just walk over and ladle whiskey out of a bucket and put it into your glass. And it was, and we'd bring some pizza. And of course,
we'll work for whiskey.
Yeah. So you get a bottle of whiskey for helping us bottle. So that was at the end, you know, you guys go walk away and they got to put their fingerprints on the process.
So cool, man.
Yeah,
so
it's cool. Fun. So it's, you know, it's always been about that kind of that community.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, man. Well, dude, let's try the, This is actually my favorite.
The sherry.
I mean, I love all of them, but
this one,
like, I love sherry. And, you know, it's kind of cool that you had the foresight to do this, because sherry is actually having a little bit of a comeback or a hot moment, you know? It's
And sherry as a wine. I know. That's kind of crazy. I filled up the little tin cap with some sherry for you. So it is, you know, sherry's fun. And really, where
I don't have to wash the dishes, do I?
No. No, we just break the glasses at the end. Just, really the sherry cask kind of came out of that whole snowflake thing. Cause that's why we had it in the first place, was just, you know, different cask finishes to try for snowflake. And everybody asked me all over the country, you know, when are you going to release snowflake to the national market? I was like, never, man. This is a Colorado thing. You got to come out to Colorado.
It's a real deal.
Come visit us.
Yeah.
You know, come visit us. And
they should. I mean, it's actually, like, Denver is one of my favorite cities.
Well, and we have a great tour program there too. I mean, you can
not
see.
Not just because I've almost lost my life there,
right?
But it's a really great city, and having that distillery there actually, even, you know, it kind of makes it better. You know, it,
yeah, absolutely,
gives me more of a reason to go by.
I mean, and we're 5 minutes south of downtown, so if you're just flying through Denver, or if you're out there checking out the dispensaries or whatever, you know, that's you know, you can come by, check out the tour. You can sign up online, you know, strainyhands.com. You can sign up for the tour, and it's about an hour long, and you get to try, you know, in the cocktail lounge, you can try a flight of whiskey. So you can actually try the snowflake, because, you know, snowflake only, it sells out the same day we release it. So, but that's how you can actually try what snowflake is. And then, or, you know, once you go through the tour, you get to try some whiskey along the way and see how we make it.
Okay, man.
Yeah.
This is great. This is one of my favorite whiskeys ever.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, man.
I'm not just saying that. I mean, it really is.
I love it. I consider this to be like the dessert whiskey to your after dinner whiskey. You know, after dinner, you're gonna have a little Diamond Peak on the rocks, maybe another one after that. And then a little dessert whiskey to
We've been there before.
Yes. Yes, we have.
So tell me about this. Like, it's been a very progressive last almost 20 years actually at this point.
Yeah.
What's next for Stranahan's?
You know, it's always about innovations, of course. You know, I'm thinking about different innovations. You know, right now for us, because we are so community based in Colorado, we're on the Colorado Distillers Guild. We've been working with the other members of the Distillers Guild to create a Colorado Spirits Trail. So the Colorado Spirits Trail is exactly what you've got the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, you know, so you got your little passport and you can go down through Kentucky and check out all the bourbons. We wanted to do something that when people are in Colorado, like, hey, you got something to do. Check out all these distilleries. They're everywhere. And that's why we call it Colorado Spirits Trail, because not everybody's just making whiskey.
You know,
there's about maybe over half of them are making whiskey, but everybody's making, you know, all sorts of different things. So we're actually launching that. We have on February 24th, a place called Mile High Station in Denver. We are launching, it's a thing called Hearts and Tails. You know, hearts is the spirit that you keep. Tails is what you get rid of. So we're launching the beginning of Colorado Spirits Trail by, you know, you can go down there, you can get a map, and if you go to a distillery, so the first 24 people to go to all 46 distilleries on the Colorado Spirits Trail, you get a stamp at every distillery, so, you know, we know you've been there.
And you get a free ride home.
You get exactly. Well, you got to go all over Colorado. I mean, it's distilleries over, you know, up in the mountains, they're on the Western Slope, they're in Denver. But the first 24 people to go to all 46 distilleries and prove it with their map, you know, their stamped map, gets a bottle from every distillery. That's 46 bottles.
That's a whole, like, home bar.
Yeah, I mean, you're set. You do that, you know, I can see somebody saying, "Okay, we're getting married next year. Let's go, you know, let's go get the booze for the wedding.
Let's go see if we can do this."
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and obviously, you know, we want people to be safe about it, but, you know, so it's, you know, try not to do it in one day.
Yeah.
Maybe
split over 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days, maybe day and a half. It is a lot of fun. We've been working with the Colorado Board of Tourism to help create this Colorado Spirits Trail. So that, you know, encourage people to come out, to check out everybody's, you know, everybody's, their pride and joy, man, what they're making, you know, everybody's if you're making it, you better love it, right? Yeah. So
absolutely, man.
Yeah, so that'll be on February 24th, and you can check it out. We have information on our website. You can check out if you're in Colorado or just happen to be passing through, come out and taste some whiskey. Everybody's gonna be pouring their juice, so it'll be a fun time.
Very cool. Well, I got to tell you, this has been one of my favorite shows. I love talking whiskey, but also I love having a good friend in the studio. And man,
hell yeah!
Everyone out there, go check out if you haven't yet. Go check out Stranahan's. It's great whiskey. Like all three of the expressions that are out there are fucking amazing. If you feel like camping out for the next Snowflake release, let me know because I'll probably be there with you, and maybe we'll get a little tent city happening. And
I'll be there, man. I'll come out and say hi, and I'll drink a little whiskey with you. So, you're always welcome, man, in Colorado.
Hell yeah, man! We've been talking about I need to get back out there and hang out with you. Like,
do
a little riding, man. Yeah. Yeah. Before drinking whiskey,
correct.
For our insurance and everything.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no, that's it. I always like to ensure people are responsible when they're drinking whiskey and drinking it after operating a motor vehicle.
Absolutely. Well, Rob, man,
Damon, it's so good to
see you.
Cheers.
Really happy to have you in the studio today, and
my
really,
pleasure.
Happy to be able to have you tell the story about Stranahan's and taste this stuff, and it's such a just good vibes all around, man.
Hells yeah.
It's great to see you.
Yeah, likewise.
God damn it, Dave. You ruined a perfectly good moment.
Wait, I'm wiping the tears out. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many other programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to Heritage Radio. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we definitely need your help. Also, just want to say, there's been over the past few weeks, we kind of reached out to a bunch of buddies. We're building a little bar here in the corner of the studio. And so I want to say thank you to everyone who has donated bottles and bar tools and glassware and everything. So sweet.
Cool.
So, it's very nice. And, sorry for Southern Teague, who couldn't be here. But
who?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I started this show alone. I'm going to end it. I'm kidding. Sorry, Southern. Anyway, until next week, that's it for the Speakeasy. Rob, cheers.
Cheers, brother.
You don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's going to save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's going to get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.